Shut up and sit down.
People who don't wash their hands after they go to the bathroom, you're nasty. The Lord is watching. I want to ride it where I lie. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I lie.
Say what? You came back for another Dialed podcast with Matt LeGrand, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von During? You're the best. We all can use a good Chinese proverb from time to time. So here you go. A man who cannot tolerate small misfortunes can never accomplish great things. Stay strong, my friends.
I want to go to the zoo and tickle a gorilla and then punch it in the face. You gotta cuss yourself out every once in a while. What can I say? You know?
Hi, welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I am Jake Bonner here with Lance Friggin' Hepler.
Lance Friggin' Hepler.
He's looking at me like, I'm
bringing the frig.
Gonna say something.
Bring the frig.
I'm bringing the frig.
For your friggin' pleasure.
For your friggin' pleasure. That's
it. Thanks, friggin'. To Lance's right, Sir Ian Gibson.
Oh, man. This is the next level intro.
Sir Ian, are you there?
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
What? That's right.
I thought you had something all worked up for us.
No, oh, man.
No, still nothing.
Help! I'm being repressed.
Oh, well, if you're gonna play it like that, then I can do this.
Oh. Presenting your Royal Highness, Sir Ian Gibson.
Hey, Ian Gibson, Gibbo. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Gibbo.
Hi, Gibbo. Welcome.
Love it. Is that?
He's got his own little like drops over here prepared.
This just underscores the importance of me trying to come up with a good intro. Yeah. I'm gonna suffer this.
Yes, it's gonna be
hard. It's gonna be hard to beat
that. Do something.
It will actually get worse.
Exactly.
Okay.
Is that challenge accepted?
Right.
It's on.
I'll come up with something.
To Gibbo's right, Mr. Matt LeGrand.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen of the internet? You guys look. You look okay. I'm going to just leave it at okay.
Thanks.
You look okay.
I'll take
okay. I've seen better and I've seen worse. Okay.
Very good. Hey, backpedal. Who wants to go first? You guys all did bikey stuff this past week.
We rode bikes.
Who raced? Anybody race?
Nobody raced.
Well, not technically.
Not technically.
It wasn't a sanctioned event.
It wasn't a sanctioned event.
Nice. Matt, would you like to go first?
Sure.
Per usual, you're good at first.
I have been running more frequently.
I'm sorry, is your bike broken?
Says I did 40. I don't think that's right. I don't think I did 40 miles last week, but I do think I ran. I think I've been running every day, some amount, not a lot, but some like 3 to 5 miles every day.
That's good.
And I can't even chased.
Yes, by Sir Ian Gibbo.
On his royal chariot.
On some sort of e-bike.
What's that noise? Oh, go fast.
It's Gibbo.
But I can't even think of the last day that I didn't go for a run. And running is the best sport. We all know this because you can take your... Because when you go to a swim meet from Thursday through Sunday night, you can sneak out and go for a run, and you just can't do that with a bike.
You can sneak out for half an hour and get something.
You can get something in.
Yeah.
Never swim unless you're drowning. Never run unless you're being chased.
Yeah. Well, the pool, I would have swam, but I was at this gorgeous, amazing pool it was like Olympic-level pool. It's Federal Way pool, if people are familiar with it. It's a Kings Valley pool or whatever it is. Anyway, so it was like... It's a 50-meter pool, but they split it up into two different pools. So it's 25 yards so they can race guys on one side, girls on the other, and then they switch each day. And then there's a dive pool so they can warm up in the dive pool. And then there's a kids' pool. I mean, it's a ridiculous facility. It's so nice. So, but it was all swimming. It wasn't even, I would say last weekend, but like it was just It was more than that. It was so much swimming Thursday through Sunday. Come on. Come on, people. That's my back pedal. Right. Come on, people.
Come on, people.
Gibbo.
Yeah, I rode my bike. Took a couple of days off after Pendleton because I was physically exhausted. And Sunday?
It was Sunday.
It was Sunday. We got together the best group ride I've been on in quite a while. It was like getting the band back together.
It was nice.
Whoa. A lot of old faces. It was just good. But it was predictably spicy, I would say.
We pre-rode the medium course at yes. the Gorge Gravel Grinder. That is going to happen on the 28th of April. So it's coming up in about a month. And John Hatfield decided he wanted to go pre-ride the whole medium course, which is almost 70 miles. And he said, who wants to come? And there were 10 people that came, 9 people that came. So we all showed up in Doofer. And
yeah, and predictably, we went off at a race pace.
It was a freaking, it was as hard as the races we've done this year already.
I got back, my TSS was 318,
ooh, I believe. Good Lord.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the week before in Pendleton, I actually was racing, and it was like 312. So there's basically nothing in it.
I talked with Paul first at the lab yesterday. He was saying, because I asked him, how did your race go? Because he raced at Mason Lakes on Saturday.
Yeah.
And he mentioned something to the effect of his seat post slipped down like an inch and a half or 2 inches or something like that. So it kind of screwed up his race. And he was kind of like peeved about that a little bit. He told me, and Paul doesn't usually like embellish things very much, or not embellish, but like give me like adjectives. You know, he's a man of not very many words, but he's like, yeah, I made up for it on Sunday. I kind of let her rip.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I mean, the first danger sign was David Barner, who was late for something. He was looking at his watch, muttering that we're going to have to go.
He had a timeline. Nobody else had a timeline. Yeah. Barner had a timeline, and we started like half an hour late. So he was already like,
Yeah,
he was jumping at the pit to go. So
and then Jay Fielding just rides fast and doesn't break a sweat.
He floats uphill.
And anyway, it was really good, really good fun. It's good course, right, Lance?
Yes,
it's
very good. The roads are in great shape. The gravel roads are not difficult. There's one little short section. You know, it's kind of funny. After the ride, Chad Sperry, who put the course together, he texted me and said, hey, how was the course? Did you like take the whole team out there, or did you rent the Balch Hotel in Doofer for the weekend and make it a gravel training camp? And I'm like, no, we just got together for the day and rode the medium course. Yeah. And he was asking, how were the roads? What did you see? And so it was kind of cool that the race director.
It was a good course. It just kept going on and on and on. There's so much more than I expected. There's that last 20 miles was a lot of rolling
gravel, some steep pitches, some difficult stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I figured we'd make that one descent down towards Doofer and just take a left and cruise into town. But it was so much more than that. There was a lot of climbing left after that one descent.
It was a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, good.
But we had a great time.
We did.
Cool.
I worked really pretty hard.
Yeah.
Exciting. Lance, would you like to backpedal?
You know, it's funny. I did almost 20 hours last week, and 14 of it was on my gravel bike.
Ooh.
Wow.
That's a good week.
I did a whole lot on the gravel bike. We had a Tuesday night gravel ride that was Barna. We had a Tuesday night gravel ride that went out to the Washougal Dike, and we showed up, and Barna, there was only 3 of us that showed up, so there weren't many people there, but the weather was perfect.
That's my fault.
Yeah.
I posted the ride. Of course, I wasn't there. And right. I posted a little bit later, and I'm like, oh, crap, I forgot to post ride for Zwift. I'm like, wait, it's too nice outside. No, these guys are going to ride outside. So
so 3 of us showed up, and Barna's like, hey, I hope you guys don't mind, but I have to do 4x10-minute FTP efforts. I have to do 4x10-minute threshold efforts. And we're like, fantastic. You do it and we'll sit on your wheel. I'd be happy to do that. And so it was kind of nice that we made Barna just whipping boy for the whole way out the dike and the whole
way
back.
Who was the other one that was with you?
Justin Sipple.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So just me and Justin and Barna.
Okay.
And we stayed together.
It was
because we made Barna do all the work and we sat on his wheel. You know, if he's sitting at his FTP, he was probably sitting at like 310.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting directly behind him at like
265.
It's pretty, it's not, that's, this sounds funny. It's not that difficult to sit on a wheel at 265 when he's sitting at 310. I'm working significantly less than he is. So we were able to kind of stay on him, which was pretty fun. So that was good. I also went out with Dr. Chris Hannell on Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
So we are trying to get together on Wednesdays and do like 3 or 4 hour rides every Wednesday.
That's cool. Does he have that day off of work? It just works for him?
Yeah, his work schedule changed a little bit. So he's like, hey, we're going to go try to do long stuff on Wednesday. And I'm like, we are? And he's like, yes, we are. And I said, okay.
Sounds like something other retirees might be interested in.
There might be other retirees that might be interested in coming on.
It could just be called the retiree.
And Hannell.
So,
I know, but...
Yeah, it was nice. We went out to Scappoose and rode a 40-mile loop out there. It was dry-ish, and we checked out some new roads he had never seen before that had... some 20% ramps that we weren't expecting.
Oh, wow.
But we had a good time. So I can't complain. I had a great week on the bike, a lot of effort. I got a lot of work done. Just going to keep trying to build on the season and see what happens. So
cool.
Good times. That's it.
No issues. Everything's staying together. Right hip's not falling off.
My right hip is not falling off. My legs are actually feeling pretty good. I was... a bit of an instigator on the team gravel ride as well on Sunday, because if it goes downhill, then you gotta do some work to try to stay in my wheel. And I was trying to get away on the downhills, and I wasn't, because everybody was working pretty hard. So,
well, it seems like there really wasn't that. It didn't seem like there was a whole lot of downhill, and the stuff that there was, you still had to pedal down it. It wasn't. There was nowhere on that course, I feel, where you could really coast and take a break.
No, there's not. And you don't get that much in gravel anyway.
Right.
There's not much coasting in gravel. So the downhills that are on the Gorge Gravel Grinder course, there was a headwind for us going downhill, so it wasn't easy. And it's not steep downhill, so you don't get going real fast. I mean, I'm going 30 miles an hour, and I'm going at 300 watts.
Working,
yeah. So
right on.
It was not easy, but it was good.
Cool.
I'm rolling.
Good.
Jake.
What?
How are you, my friend?
Backpedal.
Dude. Same S, different day. So how about this? My backpedal would be, I don't know, maybe this could be my one last thing. I don't know, I'll just say no. If you know anybody who works at Rebound Orthopedic, can you tell them to call a brother back?
Oh, jeez.
I have contacted them so many times.
You're trying to get in for your injections?
I've been ghosted by them. So
damn it.
The last doctor I met with, super great guy. And, you know, he was able to kind of like break things down. And he was like, the action points at the end of our telehealth communication was he was going to be in direct communication with this new doctor that he's going to refer me to get the ball rolling with that. And for me not to worry that I should be hearing from them soon. That hasn't happened. I was supposed to be getting a call from their scheduler to get me in this past Thursday, and it was the Thursday before that he and I had talked to get an injection into my hip for the cortisone. Not only did I not get a phone call, but I've actually tried contacting them twice, left two voice messages, and I've sent a message via the patient portal. Still nothing.
Come on, crickets. Rebound.
So
this is just, it's not just Rebound. It's every like medical company that's out there.
Are they swamped right now?
No, there's just so much. This is always the case. It's like communication just, they, blows. It just sucks.
They don't charge enough. It's not worth their while.
it's quite bad, because so if you send a message to a doctor or whatever, that gets flagged before the doctor sees it, so that they can
intercept and try and like waste his time doing anything.
Right. They don't want him to waste his time or whatever. And also that doctor is completely overwhelmed because they want that person to see as many patients as possible.
Yeah.
And so they literally couldn't handle it if they had to do all the responses themselves. And so it's just a bad system. It's bad from the top down.
I've been dealing with this group for a year and a half now. Yeah. I've been in to see them. I counted 6 visits.
Yeah.
I've had 3 different X-rays. I've had an MRI. I've had multiple like communications via the patient portal, and it's just getting them to move an inch is like it's stupid. So. I don't know. I've had, well, when I had the whole shoulder incident with my doctor a few years ago, well, gosh, it's almost 6 years ago now. He was fantastic. I never had any issues getting in to see them, had never had any communication issues.
What group was he with?
Rebound. And so I'm like, all right, maybe I need to go see my shoulder specialist to have him help me with my hip, but I don't know.
It's crazy.
Anyway, that's kind of where I'm at. It's just I was really hoping to have been almost, you know, 4 or 5 days into having the cortisone injection to see how that was going to feel. I was hoping that I could have already seen the doctor to have him address what's going on.
You
and
almost
get
have
on
to, like, as you leave the doctor's appointment, like, get on the schedule, like, have it, like, get
I an tried.
Appointment.
I tried.
It's
you,
so bad.
You have to advocate for yourself, but it's even more than just advocating for yourself. It's like you've got to be an extreme annoyance to them.
What I always think about is, like, what about the, you know, elderly patient with, like, they're a little bit, you know, they're forgetful or whatever. It's like, wow, they're screwed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, anyway, that's enough about me. I did nothing special happened this
week. Did you lift any?
I did. Yeah.
How was that?
Good. Yeah.
Pink padded weights, or are you moving on?
Yeah, pink with some purple polka dots. No.
Polka dots? Okay. Moving up. Purple. Purple's big.
Big time. Big
purple's
time.
Purple's big weights. I feel like we should describe all of our weights in color. That would be better. So that you know, like, that we don't really lift.
Yeah. I've been finished with the hypertrophy phase, kind of doing like a strength phase. I'm going to start getting into more of a power phase. I had this whole grand plan of, like, things were going to roll out and things were going to be great. And I was going to be, like, finishing into this power phase, and my hip was going to get better, and I was going to converge the two things together and come back and have this grandiose finish, or not finish, but, like, re-entrance into this whole cycling thing that I used to do. And yeah, we're just not there, but the strength training stuff is coming along. I need to change that up, though, and just do more, like, power stuff and really get away from, like, the size that I'm gaining, because I don't need that size. I'm not going to be able to fit my kid if I can ever ride a bike again. And B, being able to, you know, lift heavy weights in your upper body has no relevance.
The spandex stretches four ways. It'll get around. It'll be a tight fit. It's just like I put on my kit, like, a week ago, and it's like, oh, this is not a good look.
I've tested the limits of some
Let's push the limits.
There. Yeah. I've pushed it.
Yeah. Anyway, and I'm going to be, like, still staying on that trajectory. Like, I want to be able to get back on my bike this summer. My fingers are crossed. I don't know if it's actually going to happen or not, but I want that to happen. And I am going to continue, like, trying to change up the strength training so that it has more, like, sports specificity to cycling. And I'm going to not get on track with, like, you know, eating better. I'm not saying that I'm eating bad, but I want to try some different things. I think it's time to switch it up a little bit, because I have nothing better to do. So I might as well try it and see if I can get super lean. We'll see. Might see me, like, posing in the elderly guys stage, the bodybuilding competitions and whatnot.
They have, like, Mr. Olympia, and then they have Grandpa, Mr. Grandpa Olympia.
Mr. Grandpa Olympia.
Middle-aged man stuff. So, all right. Let's move on. That's enough.
Champ Bailey in sports.
Hey, Champ Bailey.
Champ Bailey is here.
Champ Bailey here in house. Did you see any of the races this weekend?
I sure did.
Yes. So we had Gent Wevelgem, which happened, Sunday.
Yep.
It was Sunday, Gent Wevelgem. It's a spring classic. It's not one of the monuments. It's a 250-kilometer race through the Flanders area of Belgium, thank you. It's all in Belgium, yeah. It's actually considered kind of a sprinter's race because mm-hmm. it's relatively flat, but they do go up the Kemmelberg twice, and the Kemmelberg is a classic cobbled climb, but it's only 500 meters, but it averages like 12%, and it kicks up to almost 20% near the top. So it's short, but it's steep. And that's always a deciding point. Well, guess what? It was a deciding point again this year. They went up it twice. The first time, Vanderpool attacked to try to get away from the group. And guess who went with him? Mads Pedersen and Jasper Stuyven. And another guy from Jayco. Who was the other guy? Don't remember his name.
I can't remember.
But there were four that got away. And they ended up, like, staying away. But Jasper Stuyven and Mads Pedersen are both on Lidl Trek. They're both on the same team. So there were two guys against Vanderpool. And, man, they played him. It worked.
Mm-hmm.
They they kept, one would attack and they would make Vanderpool chase it down. And then as soon as they got down, the other one would attack. They did that twice and Vanderpool had to close the gap again. He also had, Vanderpool also had his sprinter in the group. So he was trying to still kind of keep it together in case he didn't get away, that his sprinter had a chance. They just worked Vanderpool to
was
perfection.
Was it Jasper Philipsen that was there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He was in there too. He ended up like fifth place or something.
So he's looking awfully strong.
Yeah, he's looking awfully strong. So anyway, it come down to the end. It was just Mads Pedersen and Mather van der Poel. And
you're looking at this and you're like, oh, I know exactly how this is going to play out. You got Mads, who's like basically leading out van der Poel.
Correct.
You're just like, all right, when's van der Poel going to jump him?
Yeah, and there was like 1K to go. Van der Poel's in second position. Mads Pedersen's in front position. You just know that van der Poel is just going to jump him.
Yeah.
And with about 300 meters to go, Pedersen just jumps up and goes.
From the front, yeah.
From the front. And
starts to ride Vanderpool off his wheel.
Yes.
And you're like, well, oh, no, he's going to come around. And it starts to look like he's going to come around. And then you're like, holy crap, Vanderpool just sat down.
He did. Wow. Yeah, so Vanderpool went as hard as he possibly could to try to get around him. And got within a wheel's length and then just like sat down and shook his head like, nope. And Pedersen won.
That's the teamwork right there.
Yeah.
He burned too many matches. Yep.
And van der Poel is a super strong sprinter, no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. We have seen him beaten in the sprint before now, though, a couple of times.
We have.
I wouldn't say it's a vulnerability, but it's not a given. If you're a two-up sprint with the MVP, it's not a given that you're going to lose out to him. Binion Gourmet beat him. Who else? Somebody else. One of the big classics.
Wouts beat him in sprints before as well.
Yeah.
So Vanderpool ended up second, and Mads Pedersen won it. It was super exciting.
Yeah,
so
that's cool.
It was a fun race to watch. Yeah. On the women's side, they ended up in a bunch sprint with like 50 women at the end.
In the sprint?
In the sprint.
Oh, wow.
And it ended up so close, it took them almost like 4 minutes to figure out who won the race. It was like within an inch.
Seriously?
Yeah, and I think Lorena Wiebes won at the SD Works. So that was pretty exciting, too.
Cool.
Those races set up a big showdown that's going to happen this next Sunday. Is it Sunday or is it Saturday? I don't know. Tour of Flanders is coming up this weekend. Mm-hmm. I think it's Saturday. Is it Saturday?
I think so, yeah.
So Tour of Flanders happens. This is one of the monuments, big spring classic. It's going to be Vanderpool and Wout van Aert.
Is it going to be on Max or any?
It's on cool Flowbikes.
Flowbikes?
Yep, it's on Flowbikes.
Cool.
Anywhere else?
I don't know if it's on anywhere else, but I know.
You have to almost sign up for three different programs
almost
now to watch all the bike racing.
Yeah,
because I just got Max, but then
Peacock, Max, and Flowbikes are the ones that have most of them. The Grand Tours will all be either on Peacock or Max. So
yeah, so you need both of them.
Yeah,
I did hear some commentary that Matthew basically treating the E3 race and the Wevelgem race sort of like hard training rides.
Correct.
You know that his real ambition is
Flanders.
Flanders.
Last year, Pogacar won Flanders with like a 50K breakaway. He's not there this year. He is skipping Flanders.
He doesn't care about that one.
He won it last year. He's going to altitude camp to try to prep himself for the Giro. Yep. And so he won't be there, but Wout's there. Vanderpool's there. Mads Pedersen will be there. There's still a lot of it's Flanders. This is a big race. So it's setting up good for that. Other than that, nothing else happened.
There was another race, though, this past weekend.
Who?
Was another stage race that wrapped up. Which one was that? If you watched the very last race, it was, what was
Catalunya.
Catalunya, you're right.
Finished up in Barcelona.
Oh, I guess that finished, too.
Tade
just wiped the field with that.
But the last race, it looked like the field was swallowing him. And he freaking won the sprint in that. It's like, what can this guy
he sprinted
not do?
Yeah, he sprinted stage 7, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he won the sprint. Come on. So seven stages, and Tade won four of the seven stages.
Yeah.
So he won three of the climbing stages and a sprint stage.
Yep.
Freaking
yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. And you're not going to see Jonas Vingegaard going there doing that.
No.
I'm surprised because I feel like this strategy was the same thing that he did last year that, can we just say it didn't work for
He broke his wrist last year.
He broke his wrist.
Screwed him up.
I know that.
He broke his wrist in one of the spring classics. And exactly. So then he lost this huge
strategy,
chunk of.
This yeah. strategy did not work last year of go do all the races.
Well, that's why he's skipping Flanders.
Okay. So there's that.
Hmm. He's going to camp so to skip Flanders. So that should be interesting.
Cool.
But yeah, Cataluna was big.
Y'all done, champ?
Champ out.
Thank you, sir. Hey. Let's do a little Patreon drawing. Oh, hey, first and foremost, I want to thank a new patron.
Oh, good.
Hey, you guys know him. You love him. Good guy. All around good guy. Mr. Mark Radford.
Mark Radford.
Mr. Radford.
Brand new. I hate that guy.
I hate that guy. Come on. Mark is our latest Patreon, and his name is now in the bucket. For this week, we're going to give away a little cask package. We got some stuff from them. A cask hat, a cask water bottle, and a cask neck buff, if I'm not mistaken. Matt pulled a name out of the hat, or that hat, or the jar, whatever you want to call that thing. And it is
Aaron
Braff. Yeah. So Aaron is a local listener. Aaron, you want some goodies from
from
Cask, and you can
come get some
swing
Cask
by
goodies.
And pick that up at the lab. That would be great. If any of you are interested in help support the show and you want to become a patron, you can go to the Dial Podcast website or just Dial Cycling website. Click on the podcast link on there. Find the Patreon link. Click through, pick a Patreon that works best for you, and you can become a Patreon yourself. And for everybody who is a Patreon, thank you so much. You really help this little dog and pony show stay on the airwaves, stay
it's
on
really
the cloud and websites and all that other fun stuff. So anyway, thank you, and we greatly appreciate that. On that note, that's it. Let's move on. Hey, our topic for this week, fish tales. You guys ever tell a fish tale, the fish stories? How big was that trout you caught last week in Lance?
My 20-hour week was really 18 and a half.
Oh, was
18
it?
And a half. All of it was at FTP.
And all of it at FTP.
All
the whole thing.
By that I mean my FTP from 1997.
Yeah. We're going to talk about FTP. There's a lot of stuff to uncork there, to understand it, to wrap your head around. And then I'm just kind of curious to hear some fish stories from you guys about your FTP. And where that might be at these days. Mine used to be pretty decent. It's probably somewhere in the hundreds now. I don't know. We'll find out soon enough.
Triple digits.
maybe. Ian, you want to tell us, since you are the resident coach, what your FTP is and how one would derive.
Tell us how long your penis is. Don't you feel like
it's maybe long? It's
don't you feel
long.
Like
300 and my FTP?
Don't you feel like this is like, you know, like how much can you lift? Like I feel like there's some things that like we should probably just not talk about.
Well, it's true that it's become an ego thing, right?
Sure.
Almost everybody overstates their FTP.
It's yes, normal. Yes, pretty normal.
My yeah. FTP. Is right around 300. At least it was last summer, and it's not now. Let's say, for sure. Like and it's basically worthless if you base your training off of your FTP, and your FTP is not accurate. Then you're always doing the wrong intensity.
You're either doing a little too much or not quite enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the other thing is, it varies a lot. From the FTP you measure on the trainer, on Swift, and what you can actually do out in the real world.
Yeah.
So, on the bike. To go back, FTP stands for functional threshold power, and basically that's the max number of watts that you can hold for an hour. However, none of us, I know that I've never personally done a full hour, like a bona fide FTP test.
No.
You generally speaking are doing it in a 20-minute block of time. But you can do it in an 8-minute block of time. And then there are other ways that you can come about that number through other kinds of AI that will look at different metrics and kind of generate a number. There are benefits for doing it all of the different ways, and we can get into that in just a moment. Anything that you, did I miss anything on that?
No, but let's just talk about what you mentioned, how to define FTP. So functional threshold power, the threshold being your basically your anaerobic threshold, where the acidity in your blood, so which correlates to the amount of lactate in your blood, is kind of increasing exponentially faster than you're able to
clear it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So that'll be your physiological threshold there, and it maps closely to your functional threshold, the power that you can actually put out around that marker. Traditionally, it's supposed to be something a power level that you could sustain if for an hour. In reality, a lot of people's FTP is more like a 35, 40 minute max effort.
Yes.
But yeah, you know, as a marker of your fitness, as a percentage of the maximum amount of oxygen you can produce, then the higher that percentage is, in theory, the all around more fit athlete you are. So it does have a lot of relevance in that sense, that it's a good metric to use to gauge how your fitness is progressing or how much you're losing it.
Right.
It's interesting, like the when they developed this, it was like the, what was the coach that he, it's the same guy that like kind of did all of the stuff with
Andy Coggan.
Training Peaks.
Andy Coggan.
Right. I've heard mixed things about him and stuff like that, but it's so interesting that he kind of defined all of this stuff, normalized power, I think that they've like trademarked and things like that. Like you can't use it without, I mean, it's basically owned by Training Peaks at this point.
That's why normalized power isn't on your Zwift, or pardon me, isn't on your Strava.
They don't want to pay for it.
They don't want to pay for to use it on your Strava metrics.
Yeah, so, probably because they have to. I'm sure the way the licensing reads is like every time you use it, you got to pay us.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's interesting that those guys kind of pioneered this space in defining it, because I mean it would still be an equally valuable number if it was, we're going to define FTP as what you could hold for 30 minutes. It would be a different number. And it would still be valuable because you could base your training on it. And all of our percentages would be slightly different and our numbers would be different. And an hour is just a nice arbitrary number that, you know, and the way that we used to do it was like you would do these FTP tests where you would do 2 20-minute tests and then you'd do a percentage of the average of those to kind of figure out what we think that you could do for an hour. And there's tons of different ways to estimate FTP, but I would say almost no one goes out and does an hour of solid, like all out, whatever.
It's usually a 20-minute test or an 8-minute test. Yeah.
But it is a valuable tool to use, because the alternative is actually more what the pro teams are doing now is measuring in the lab your actual threshold power, the power you're putting out as your lactate curve swings up.
So that would be their lactate threshold as opposed to their functional threshold power, right?
Yes, and they're doing training rides to bump that up and measuring that.
And even...
So not having access to the lab as mere mortals, then the functional threshold power is a good tool in your arsenal.
Even Evan Price, podcast extraordinaire, and Josh Monda, those guys, they'll test their lactate as they do workouts, and they'll do a ramp test and they'll test their lactate and they'll look for that spike. And that spike is basically, like you said earlier, it's like when your blood is not able, your body itself is not able to clear lactate from the blood at a normal rate. And it's interesting, like the whole, you can train that, right? So the lactic shuttle is an energy system as well. And so if you can train that, it's an extremely valuable body process to train and improve, which we are doing when we train at FTP values. There are small tools that even us mere mortals can use. It's basically a blood test, and they do the earlobe prick.
Yeah.
If we want to play around with that stuff.
And interestingly, to get really geeky on it, it's not actually the lactate that's causing your blood acid levels to increase that much. It's a
It's like the pH value of the...
Yeah, the pH value of the blood goes up, but and it correlates to how much lactate is in the blood, but it's not as a result of that lactate. Because lactate is basically a fuel you can use just like carbohydrates, glycogen.
Why is there such a difference between your on-the-trainer indoor FTP and what you can do outdoor? Is that just
perceived
effort?
Mine's like 1,000 watts different. It's so frustrating.
It's generally about 10%.
Mine's like 25 watts different between outdoor and indoor, which...
I would agree with that, definitely. Yeah. And I don't know why. And I don't think anybody's ever given a compelling reason why that is. I'm for sure there with you. 20 watts at least difference.
A big psychological component. It's a lot easier to suffer outside than it is indoors. And you've got a lot better means of thermoregulation too, and that's going to have a pretty significant impact on it. And you know, there's just something too about the natural sway of the bike going back and forth. And I think you can actually generate a little bit more power based on the fact that the mechanics of how you're riding the bike are just a tiny bit different, and all of those little things start to add up, and it's kind of like the whole marginal gains things. Well, it's marginal gains on your FTP is going to be there because you're riding outside.
Yeah, and also when you're doing an FTP test indoors, you generally have your trainer set in erg mode, right? So you're holding an absolute constant power level at all times, and you don't do that on the road. You have these little micro breaks, little easing off in effort, and then a push. I mean, naturally, you don't have that super constant, no variable power
output. A good question then is it important for people to have an outdoor FTP that they have actually done and an indoor FTP that they've actually done so that they can assign power numbers to whatever they're doing in terms of training? Like, if you're training outdoors, you need to have a number for that. If you're training indoors, you need to have a number for that. And if you try and like cross use those two numbers, then you're going to throw off your zones and you're going to be doing a disservice to yourself to a certain degree.
Yeah. My answer is yes.
Yeah.
For sure. Because your trainer FTP is going to be lower, but that's okay because the workouts you're doing is based on a percentage of that FTP. Yep. So
do you have two FTP values for the athletes that you coach?
No, but they are aware of the discrepancy of the difference. And the last 6 months, you can say almost all of the structured training my athletes have been doing up here in the rainy Pacific Northwest has been on the trainer anyway. Yeah. But as those guys get outside and start doing their intervals out on the road, for sure we need to.
Yeah, I'm sure that you could start to get a little bit of a track record with these people, and then you can start to look and see what that average percent difference is, and then you can start to just say, all right, well, based on the training that you've done indoors, we're going to do some outdoor stuff, and we're going to add X percent to it based on the differentials that you've had over the last few tests, and say that this is where you're going to be out for your outdoor stuff, and just make sure that you change it for the indoor stuff, right?
Right, and actually looking at somebody's FTP that they've gotten to on their outdoor rides is relatively simple if you make use of the power curve feature in Training Peaks or even Strava. You look at your, you know, historically, what have you done over the last 6 weeks? What was your 20-minute average maximum power? You look on your power curve, and then you'll need to do a little calculation. 95% of that should give you a reasonably accurate number.
Here's a question for you, and I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but I'm curious to see what your response is. Let's say that you've done your FTP test outdoors and you get a number. And then let's say that you go out and you do yourself a spicy gravel ride and you're going to do a long climb, and then you come home and you're like, well, crap, looks like I just crushed my FTP. Would you say then it's okay for that person to go ahead and adjust their FTP based on an effort that they put in on a ride or even like a race that they went out and did some big numbers, even though it wasn't structured, it wasn't something that they were trying to do, and who knows, they could have done a little bit more even. I mean, are you going to say, all right, well, we can use that and we're going to retest, or we're just going to use that and change your FTP based on what you put out in that particular effort?
No, I think so, because that shows you, even if you were in a race where you're motivated and you have so much, you're so much more capable of going harder, it seems like, in a race. But that's relevant, right? Because the FTP should be the most you can do for that period of time. 100%. So, So yeah, if you can your numbers from a race or a hard group ride you did, and you look at your power and you go, wow, you know, 20 minutes I put out 320 watts, then you're sure.
Okay, yeah. So let's say that same person, you know, put out bigger numbers, but let's say that they did for 30 minutes and not just 20 minutes. How are you going to use that data?
There's a
different calculation, different percentage.
Yeah,
that
there's
you can
a different
take.
Percentage.
And for those that don't know, like basically what you're going to do is you're going to do a 20-minute test. You're going to get the max average power that you did during that 20 minutes, and then you're going to multiply that by 0.95. And that number is what your FTP number is. So I'm guessing then if it were 30 minutes and not 20 minutes, you could probably alter that percentage. Yeah.
It wouldn't be that much. It's interesting that how the curves look on these. Like it's an logarithmic curve, and it levels off pretty quick as you move down the pipe. And it's really interesting to, I'm sure you've seen this in, I guess it's in Training Peaks, but it used to be in a program called Cheetah. What was that? Do you guys remember that free
program? Oh, Cheetah Fast, Cheetah Fast,
something
fast
like that. It was this open source program. It was absolutely amazing. But yeah, you would log all of your top times or whatever over like 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute, 5 minute, you know, 20 minute, and then you see the curve and it's the logarithmic curve. And then you're looking at like, okay, well, hour is here.
Yep.
And so you would have this value of your FTP, and it would basically be derived from some of those numbers from all of your rides. And it's quite good. Meaning that you don't have to do an FTP test. And I think a lot of the AI software that we see now is basically doing the same stuff, but under the hood, right? It's like you do, even the Apple Watch, right? Which is notoriously bad at predicting your FTP, but it's looking at a number of rides and then it's like, okay, well, we can figure out your FTP. Here's what we think it is. Hmm. Even after like a couple of rides, which it underestimates a lot, but that's okay. But I do think that's kind of like where a lot of the software things are going.
Yeah.
And so 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
There's a number of different protocols out there for measuring FTP. And this is why you have to be wary of comparing your FTP to others, because they may have measured their FTP or derived it in some other way.
Yeah.
But FTP is relevant to you and your future you and your past you. How much is the training you're doing, how effective is it?
And more times than not, too, it's very much correlated to what your body mass is as well. So your watts per kilogram, like you can get a big guy that can put out huge monstrous numbers, but as soon as things go up, and that guy, if he weighs, I don't know, 240 pounds or something like that, watts per kilogram, that's going to tell the whole story.
Whole different story.
Because the guy that puts out 100 less watts in his FTP that weighs maybe 145 or 155 pounds is going to absolutely drop that climb as soon as the climb starts to go up.
Yeah.
It's a done.
Yeah.
Done deal. But that guy maybe wants to like lean towards crits or something like that, because he can take advantage of those big watts. So,
well, that brings us to an interesting topic, right? Is how relevant is your FTP? Like you said, if you have a big FTP in absolute terms, then you, in theory, you've got a lot of absolute power. You'll do better on those flat races, sprint finishes, and so on. And if the power you put out relative to your body mass is high, then I'm stating the obvious here, but you're going to be a better climber.
There's other things that you need to take into consideration as well. And a perfect example of this would be like Matt LeGrand, or like when, like Dr. Hanel, when you ride with Dr. Hanel.
Yeah. Hanel and I are very similar cyclists.
his FTP is good. But he'll tell you it's not fantastic, but he's just that kind of guy that can hold that FTP for a crazy long time. The other thing that kills me about him is, he doesn't weigh a whole heck of a lot, but that guy gets so stinking aerodynamic. He's very slippery in the wind. So there are a lot of factors there that come into play with how you use those watts. Yeah. So
that's true.
Don't automatically like look at somebody and think just because they put out like 20 or 30 more watts than you in your FTP that they're going to crush you, because there might be some factors that you're not taking into consideration there.
I agree that there's a ton of factors, especially when you're like making this mistake of comparing FTP numbers between different cyclists.
Yeah.
Because you're not looking at like 1,000 different things. But I still think FTP is an extremely valuable number and tool for training, especially if you're like, you take an athlete, we're going to do the same FTP test over this next year, we do an FTP test once every 2 months or something like that. and you're using the same testing protocol, the same equipment, the same athlete, then that number becomes extremely valuable to see if we're progressing or if we're not progressing, or how we're going to base our workouts or how we're going to do things. It's the overuse of this number and comparing it to different people who are using different testing protocols and different equipment, and they're different size people.
Yes.
Where you're like, well, this is like the whole like dick measuring competition. Yes. Like my FTP is 305. Well, you also weigh 400 pounds, you know, and
hey, be quiet. Stop talking about me that way.
Well, here's a classic example. Me and Chris Surratt.
Yeah.
Okay. We ride together a lot. And this year we've raced together a couple times and we are almost evenly matched on race efforts. We rode the Pendleton gravel race together and we stayed together the whole time until the course split because I did the short and he did the long. But we stayed together the whole time. His FTP is like 25 or 30 watts higher than mine. But he's like 15 pounds heavier than me.
Yep.
He's probably 15 pounds heavier than me.
Significantly taller than you.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's... Because here's the thing, like you finish a ride, like, and you're talking to your friends, what do you do? What was your natural, you know, what was your normalized power? What was your, you know, whatever.
Yes.
Like watts are watts, and it's a value that is of extreme, it's a number that's of extreme value to us. And so it's okay, I think, to just start talking about it. Like even Jake and I would ride together, very different riders, a lot more power that Jake would put out. And I would be on like a TT bike or whatever. And so I'm more aero or whatever it is. And so, but we would still be like, you know, what watts are you putting out right now? Like, what are you putting out right now? Like, what's the deal, man? Because you're moving pretty quick or whatever it is. And you're like, so I think watts are still extremely valuable. They're still worth talking about. But you kind of just got to remember that, you know, my watts aren't your watts. And
yeah, it doesn't have to be a big ego discussion. I mean, it doesn't have to be that way. Sometimes it is, but I like that. I find it interesting at the end of the ride to talk about what your TSS was and what your normalized power was.
Yeah.
And it's not that I'm boasting or bragging. It's just cool stuff.
It's cool metrics to chat, right?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone,
get over the ego part of it and then talk about, well, that's great. Let's talk about how we can make those numbers better, but let's talk about how we can better utilize those numbers. Like, right, well, you're doing this with this many watts. Like, what if we changed your fit just a tiny bit? What if we worked on a little bit more core stability? What if we worked on, like, just the little things or, like, changed the bike that you're riding, the kind of bike that you're riding, or little things like that can take that FTP and produce more, productive watts for you. I mean, you can definitely do more with it. You can be a faster cyclist.
Here's another thought.
Yeah.
I mentioned this, in my backpit a little bit, but, like, me and David Barna, we roughly have the same FTP. His is probably 10 watts higher than mine.
Okay.
But he's 20 pounds lighter than me. So he's doing FTP efforts. I'm able to sit on his wheel without too much effort.
Mm-hmm.
But where that comes into play is going uphill.
Yeah.
If we hit a climb and the climb is longer than 2 minutes, there's no way in hell can I stay with David Barna. But if it's like 90 seconds or less,
but you're burning a match.
And
that happens 15, 20 times during the course of a race, that starts to add up.
They're going to wear me out.
Yeah.
Yes, correct.
That was me at Baker City with Chris Hanel last year. He said right after the race, I was right at FTP going up those hills. And I'm like, I was with you, dude. I was VO2 max.
I was way higher than that.
Absolutely.
I think that the smarter number to compare would be, you know, like watts per kilograms or something like that. But like none of us do that. None of us really, like, what watts per kilo were you holding on that hill? Like, does anyone ever say that?
No.
Okay.
Some people,
the pro cyclists talk about it a lot more than we do.
Well, a lot of people don't want to talk about that because they don't want to acknowledge the fact that maybe they have some weight to lose. And that's a sticky subject to talk about in general. I mean, we don't talk about people having body dysmorphia or eating disorders or things of that nature, but that's a reality in this sport.
But a metric you can be proud of and talk openly about after a ride is something like TSS, training stress score.
Because
it's basically how hard you were working relative to how hard you normally work. So it's a measurement of how much effort
how much work you put in.
How much you put in.
That's huge. I think that's
a
great one.
It's like you achieved a certain a certain goal yeah. or a
that's another one of those level, scores yeah. that's owned by Training Peaks.
It's yeah. not on Strava.
Training stress score, yes. TSS yeah. score.
They try to have something similar, but it's not really the same.
So yeah. Wahoo and Garmin and Hammerhead, I guess, they just license correct. All, and they're correct. Willing to pay for that, but Strava's yes. not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, Strava.
Yeah.
Exactly. What do we ever do back in the day?
I don't know.
When we didn't have these numbers to work with.
They used a clock.
Yeah, basically,
abacus.
I had
an abacus and a sand.
Average speed.
Average speed was a good one, yeah.
And interestingly enough, you know, if you listen to Lance Armstrong or Geraint Thomas or these guys, they
who?
Talk G.
Who?
Jertaint.
I don't know.
Okay.
Jertaint. I only know
who you're talking about.
So, I don't know any Geraint Thomas. I know Jertaint. We know him well.
When they're prepping for like the Tour de France, okay. the Tour de France contenders want to be able to hold 7 watts yeah. per kilogram for 20 minutes at the end of a 5-hour ride. Ugh. So they know they're ready for the Tour or to be a contender in the Tour if they can hold 7 watts per kilogram for 20 minutes.
Don't be suspicious.
Yeah, dude.
Don't be suspicious.
It's freaking crazy. Well, what about, what do you think pro cyclists FTPs are? What do you think?
Low 400s.
Well, they're super, some of them are better. I wonder if they're under 400, some of them. They're just skin and bones.
I guarantee some are under 400.
Yeah, you're right. But
Dylan Van Baarle, he won Paris-Roubaix last year. And he has said that his FTP was 440 at the time.
Wow.
Which was just 5.5 watts per kilogram. But he had a 440 FTP before he won Paris-Roubaix.
Well, going back several years, they reckon that Bradley Wiggins put down something like 420 watts.
He's a pretty tall guy,
for
right?
a 1 hour in the velodrome. Steady 1 hour effort at over 400 watts.
Right.
He's pretty tall.
He's pretty big guy. Yeah.
Is he 6'2"? We should look at that up and see how tall.
I always think for an amateur cyclist, though, for say like a Cat 3 racer, you can be competitive, I would say, if you could achieve a 4 watts per kilogram.
Yeah.
As a road racer, as a mid-pack, successful Cat 3 racer.
Yeah. About 4 watts per
kilogram. 4 watts, yeah. Which is it's what, 70% of what a pro can put out? Not even that.
Yeah, yeah, right. Pretty crazy.
He's 6'3", so he's pretty tall, Bradley Wiggins.
So yeah. Brennan Wirtz, he's a gravel guy that's been racing in the gravel scene this year. He was a former rower before he turned to cycling and gravel cycling. He is a big dude with a lot of muscle on him. I want to say he's like 6'5 or more. He's a big guy. But his FTP is 475.
No way.
475. Because he's a big dude. Wow. Like, you get on that guy's wheel, you just got a free ride.
What do you think, like, Wout Van Aert? Like, he's a big guy, too.
He's like 165, and he's like 6'1 or 2 or something like that.
Okay. There's some of those cyclocross guys are solid, not just like skin and bone.
Gotcha. Do you guys know what your best watts per kilogram ever was when you were at your lightest, leanest, and best FTP numbers?
I think last year I was 4.1, 4.2, something like that.
That's okay. And that's probably a
best ever.
Best ever.
Yeah, because I'd lost a bunch of weight too.
Sure, sure. So, yeah. What about you, Lance?
In the early 2000s, I was racing Ironmans at 160, 160 pounds. It was way too freaking light for me. And I was right about 4.2.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
How about you, Matt? Do you recall? Are you crunching numbers over there
Calculating right now.
Where's the number?
What about you, JVD?
The best that I ever put in, I was about 180 pounds. It was about 4.6.
Ugh. Yeah.
So
I think I was pretty close to that. It was probably 4.5 or something like that because I was super scrawny and skinny. And I was my FTP was, I never broke 300 on my FTP. That was always my goal. But I was in the low 290s. Mm-hmm. But I was really, really didn't weigh much.
Was this when you and I first started riding together when you were training for Ironman in Arizona?
Probably.
I still really miss those days when we used to go out to the beaches and Matt and I would just throw down. It was always the two of us at the very end
of it.
We
could go anytime. And and so I don't think I put out like big watts, but I could get slippery but I mean, like, I still feel like I think I could have gotten to 300. I just never did. But then Ironman was
just, you told me that you you popped over 300 at one point.
I don't think
time.
I ever did. No, that was all, because that was like one of the. It's just such a nice round number.
Yeah,
that it was just like that would have been a great achievement for me, and I would basically do all of my stuff based on like trainer FTP stuff. So, okay. Yeah.
So as a triathlete though, when you basically doing long distance solo efforts, you would put in a lot of training right around that threshold point, right? Because that would be the most relevant energy system to train. It'd be right there at FTP.
Absolutely. But I think that when you're in the wintertime, you have this opportunity to train different systems a little bit. And so I would always do like 1 minute efforts because I just think that that's a really good way to increase that kind of like maximum capacity that you can actually put out. Mm-hmm. And then when you get into really like summer racing season, it's all long, boring stuff. Mm. But that at that same time of the year, you can actually go outside and do it on the road as opposed to the trainer. And I think mentally it's a big part of the piece too, where it's like indoor, you're doing stuff. It's wintry, it's rainy outside. You're maybe only doing like an hour to 2 hours in the train. You can do some of that shorter stuff and it breaks it up and it's mentally easier. Versus like if you had asked me, I have done 100 miler on the indoor trainer. So has Lance. He's crazy. But like that's miserable.
I've done once a year.
You're crazy.
Stupid.
I haven't done it in a long time. But I think that it's like you just kind of need to like recognize the fact that some of these things are crazy hard. You don't always need to do them. Whereas like short intervals may be mentally a little bit easier and they're still great for you.
Yeah.
Like do them in the winter. Do them on the indoor trainer and then save some of that long, hard stuff that you can do outdoor on the outdoor road.
Mm. How often are you guys doing FTP tests when you're like on a program? I mean, you probably recommend that you're doing it, what, every 8 weeks or so-ish? Yeah. 8-10 weeks, somewhere in that range? Or is it less or more? Or?
You could do it more, but I am hesitant to set FTP tests too often. They suck.
And it's a big effort, yeah.
It's hard, right? Two, everybody's always disappointed after they've done their FTP test because it always comes back less than you were expected, than you thought you could do.
Is that because they're new in their training? I feel like you're okay. I feel like there are two reasons to be disappointed. One, your FTP is lower than you expected. But if the other side of the coin, you could be disappointed that it's higher than you expected because then your training is going to get harder.
Yes. Well, so there's that.
Double disappointment.
All the training gets harder when your FTP goes up.
You're like, dang it. As soon as you hit those numbers, do you guys ever feel like gut punch? Like, uh-oh, that workout, it's going to be so hard.
Those first couple
this
workouts,
week.
You're like, minus, minus, minus. It's too hard. I can't do it.
Been there. Yep. I don't know.
I do FTP. Well, I wouldn't test more than like 3 times a year at the most.
Really?
Yeah. Because like
I bet your FTP values vary significantly. Like right now, you should do an FTP test because you're firing on all cylinders.
I'm probably 315 outdoors right now.
You should do a test. Every 5 to 6 weeks in an ideal world, you know, you do your block of training, maybe a 4 weeks training block. You take an easy week, and at the end of that easy week, you'll do a test when you're fresh.
Instead of doing a test, I've been taking my highest 20-minute power and times it by 0.95.
Yeah, but I think that's not. I don't think there's anything wrong with that because if you're consistent with that's how you're testing it, then that's a good value.
And chances are you had fun doing that too, so you weren't suffering, that's easier to replicate.
And I would rather do a workout or a chill ride that day than an FTP test.
How does that number compare? Because I assume those are outdoor rides for the most part, right?
Yes.
Like, so how does that number compare for you? You said 25 watts-ish when you compare it to like, do you use training peak, like train, not train, sorry, I said training peaks, but I meant trainer road. Do you use trainer road and they have like the AI estimated FTP value?
I'm not using trainer road this year.
What?
Yeah, I'm using a different program that also has an AI FTP detection.
Okay.
Yeah.
How does it compare? Sorry. You said it's about 25 watts off?
It's about 25 watts off. I have my indoor FTP set at 298.
Okay. I'm thinking about me personally. It's like I need an indoor FTP and an outdoor FTP because my indoor is so bad. Like 100 watts, triple digits. What are we doing here?
The other interesting thing about FTP tests is people always finish them and feel like they could have done more. Like you do these ramp tests and it goes up, what, 20 watts
right.
every minute.
Until you fail.
Until you fail. But people think that they could have pushed past that failure point. They could have done one more step. And it's just not, it's not true. You were doing as much as you could do. Yeah. In fact, if you've ever been to a lab and done a VO2 max test, you know, you always get off of that thing thinking, oh, I quit too early. I could have done more. But when you look at the trace on the monitor, you can see that point, that in, that point where those lines cross, and that's your VO2 max and how it levels out. Even though you were
pushing beyond that,
you weren't actually processing more oxygen at that time. It, right. it plateaued out. It was
so
a
like,
physical
hey.
Barrier that right. you that was the as much as you could do. And it's the same with FTP tests, especially that ramp test. It, no, when you...
Because you go to failure.
You go to absolute failure, yeah.
Yeah, and
but you
and
convince going, yourself that you didn't.
Well, in going to failure, that has a lot to do with a person's like pain management, mental ability to manage pain. Because you can push beyond that.
One of the reasons why I like FTP tests is because it's going to build a little bit of mental toughness for people. You need to learn how to go to that... that place you got to know how to dig in that
well.
That's
so intimidating to start an FTP test. You're like, oh my God, this is
You know how
hurt.
Much easier it is to dig deeper when you're chasing somebody down than instead of just trying to push watts on a trainer?
Yeah. When
it's
you're
so much easier.
And when you're in the trainer, that same amount of time feels like it takes twice as long, whereas you're chasing somebody, it feels like it takes a fraction of the time.
Yes.
So there is a big mental component there.
Yeah.
No. It's... It's definitely a fun thing to kind of play with, and you got to learn yourself. I personally don't like doing a lot of FTP tests because I hate the suck, and I, just like Lance, will go out there and purposely find a group ride that I know is going to be super hot and spicy, or go extract from an actual race and get your numbers that way.
Do you look for something that's like, it's, so even in that situation, 20 minutes is hard to find.
It is, yeah.
Because like, let's say you're on a hot, spicy group ride, 20 minutes is just rare. I mean,
well, a good place to start would be like the flogging ride.
That's go to the flogging ride and go
just
to the front.
Go to
and
the
just
front.
Be like, I'm
just
the guy.
Be
I'm
that
the
guy.
Sacrificial lamb.
Exactly. And pull and pull and pull and see if you can break away from people. If you can like jump the group and then get yourself into a solo and see how long you can hold that.
It's 20 minutes. But I mean, the other thing is stop signs and stop lights and all the things. It's always hard to find like
it's
20 minutes.
It's not going to be perfect, but it's going to be close.
Yeah.
So
here's another thing. If you have to ask yourself, what are you training for, right? What if you manage to get this 1 hour incredible power, how many times in an actual bicycle race are you gonna put that to use? In my experience, especially as a roadie, you're rarely doing a sustained effort for that amount of time.
That's right.
Right. A typical road race, you're in the pack doing a high zone two, maybe a tempo pace. There'll be a surge where everybody's going anaerobic. That'll last a couple of minutes, and then things will calm down. And then at the end of the race, there'll be you're going to go neuromuscular in your sprint. I mean, yeah, maybe if I guess long steady climbs or long solo breakaways is if that's your style, if that's how you race, then it's more beneficial to spend more time training at FTP.
Yeah.
Yes.
In knowing those numbers, I think that's where the value is, where you're like, okay, I'm in a breakaway. This is the number I need to sit on, which probably happens less in a road racing situation. Triathlon, it's like,
it's a lot more important in triathlon. Yeah.
And especially what's interesting is like back in a long, long time ago, like dinosaur time frame when Lance wasn't doing, when he was a triathlete, knowing your power numbers and FTP, no one else knew that stuff. It was like cheating.
Yes.
It really was. Like, so like I was quick to jump on the power stuff and I was like, oh man, like you hold this percentage of FTP for an Ironman and then you get off and your legs feel okay to run. If you do more, or if you push that hill like every single other triathlete that you're out there racing, they go and they hit the hill and they hit 300 watts or whatever. And then, you know, 100 miles later, they're donezo. Like, there's just, it's like, this is cheating. Like, I'm not going to go over this value. Like, it's just.
It's like, you go 10% harder in the bike and you lose an hour and a half on the run because you went 10% harder on the bike. That's what happens in triathlon.
It's just such an interesting thing where it's like, I really felt like the first time I started using it, I was like, this is cheating. I hit this number. I get off the bike, I feel pretty good. And you're passing people in the second half of the bike anyway, because they're doing 100 watts over what they should be doing. And you've held like a nice, steady pace the whole way. So
yeah, if you look at the endurance track events on a velodrome, you're not allowed to have your power meter in view. You can record your power, but you can't ride to that power.
Even the hour record, right? You're not supposed to have
it. In the hour record, particularly, yeah.
What are the distances for the enduro track races? Is it kind of like the hour and above or something, or don't know? Okay,
I know there's a 4. There's a 1 kilometer pursuit. There's a 4K.
Oh, so that's pretty short then.
Short, and then there are. I'm not a trackie. I don't know.
Yeah, me either. Short, me either. I've always thought of track races as being like these short events or whatever, and the hour is pretty long. So. Don't know.
That's crazy.
Hmm.
Yeah. On this gravel ride, we just did the.
Did you set
the
a
practice
power PR?
Race? I didn't set a power PR, but I held 300 watts for 20 minutes in the first 30 minutes of our 4-hour ride.
Yes. Ooh.
Yeah, that's how hard we started.
Why did you guys start so hard?
It was a climb.
I went on the training camp that one year, and I was like, we do these 5-hour days every day, and every single time I'm like, why is the first hour? Like, I would look at my power meter. I'm like, I'm going 300 watts in like the first 10 minutes. I'm like, what the?
Yeah, it's too much.
I laughed. Like, what are we doing? On Sunday, I laughed because we pulled out of the parking lot. And we were doing 300 watts. I was doing 300 watts immediately. Yeah. There was no warm-up, but I'd just come to expect that. That's dialed cycling team training pace. That's what happens.
So. Dialed cycling training pace is go all out for the first 20 minutes and then call an ambulance.
When you go on a dialed training ride, bring the stationary trainer and do a good 30-minute warm-up before the ride starts, because you're sure not going to get a warm-up.
Right.
Once we get rolling.
Who is it? Who's guilty? Is it Lance?
Yeah,
is he the one?
It's Lance. We hate him.
I'm one of the instigators, yes.
I'm going to deflate your tires.
I always start hotter than I should.
Yeah.
It's one of my race strategies that sometimes works.
I would expect that to work, actually.
And sometimes completely backfires.
But for a 4-hour team ride, you're not racing.
Not so much.
Even at training camp, Chris Horner, who was there with us,
why do
you guys always go off so quickly?
I don't know. I'm glad that he said
stupid.
That. Thanks,
he did
Chris.
Say that.
Call these guys out.
He did call us out. I'm not sure what's happening, but it's not smart.
What are you doing? Here's a quick tip for you.
Whatever you're doing, not smart.
Don't be stupid, stupid.
Okay, I looked up Wout van Aert. They assume his FTP is 460 around there.
Okay.
How much more interesting would cycling be if everybody had to disclose their power numbers and it was put up on the screen while the race was going?
We've talked about this. I would absolutely love that, to watch it. Stage and just be like, this person's watts per, he's here's what his watts per kilo are right now.
Yeah,
like, I mean, I get the premise behind why you're not wanting to share these numbers, because people can really start to key in on you, but I mean, they have to be able to get a certain amount of information, and they should be hiring the Matt Legrands of the world to go hack their bike computers so that other teams can be just, like,
it's all about like transponding that whole information from your power meter to the broadcast, right? They would need those little transponders on the back of their bike to submit more information than GPS locations.
Technically, they could easily do it, I'm sure.
I think they could.
Hmm.
I think they could definitely do it. And I think it would be, they should do a test run and see what people think. And I really think people would enjoy it.
But in some ways, it would definitely change the nature of the competition if everybody knew everybody else's power in real time. It would change the way races were raced, and
especially if your team car was like, this guy's doing this wattage.
Yes, it would. Yeah. The guy in the brake
is what would happen.
The guy in the brake is going over his FTP by 20% at the moment. This is not going to last.
Or what if you're like in this like breakaway of three, and you're like, the so and so Lance is not working. He is not working. He is sitting in. He went to the front, but he was only in the front, and he put out this many watts for this amount of time. And then he went back, and he's just not putting up. Like, you could just be like,
he's taking the piss.
Right.
It would be another level of insight into all of this stuff. But I do think that a lot of these guys, that information might be worthless to them anyway. But, you know, because think about it, like, they know that Lance is going to slack off in the front when he's in a breakaway.
Yeah.
They know that.
Hmm.
There's no mystery. There's no mystery there. That's why I don't race on the road. That's why you're not in breakaways.
I'm not in breakaways. I've made a break, I think, twice in all the road races I've done, and one of them stayed away, and I lost the sprint.
Which race was that again?
It was Cherry Pie.
Oh,
I was in a break with Chris Surratt.
Okay,
and Dan Litwora, and Rob Angelo, I think, was the other guy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I can't remember.
That was my best race ever, Cherry Pie.
Cherry Pie.
Because, anyway, it's a long story.
That had the potential to be a really good race for me.
Fell apart.
Oh, man, I still think about that race from time to time. Like, what would have happened if those guys had not crashed right in front of me? Like, I don't know. I was just telling somebody.
You were the fast guys that day, too. Cat ones.
That was my first Cat 1-2 race.
I
had to go out and race like 70 some odd miles with a bunch of Cat 1s, and it was open, so I was with all of the young bucks. I'm like, I'm going to get destroyed in this race, and somehow I miraculously held on. There was a couple times that I yo-yoed off the back. I'm like, don't give up, don't give up, don't give up, because you do a couple laps of this thing, and sure enough, like, we came off the last climb, and I was still attached to the group, and I sat in and felt good, and we're coming to the sprint. I'm looking around. I'm like, I don't see a lot of sprinters around here. And I kind of have an idea who's in my 40 plus Cat 1-2 category. I'm like, I might be able to land on the freaking podium.
Yeah.
And we get to the end of that race. They open up the full road at 200 meters and everybody kind of spreads out. And then all of a sudden everybody starts going like gangbusters. And I'm like, I'm in a good position. There's a couple of guys here and there's two trains lining up. I like the train that I'm on. I like the lines. And all of a sudden these two guys right in front of us, like, hooked bars, went down, hit them and flew over the bars. And the next thing you know, I'm on my back and I'm like, that's not right. That's not how this is supposed to end. But yeah, I still,
we were all celebrating in the parking lot and Jake shows up with his kit all just torn to shreds.
Yeah.
Blood coming out of his arms and that race exemplified the teamwork in a race. It was just such a good experience.
Sure.
I remember Michael chased down everything that went off the front.
Yep.
Kept it together.
Yep.
And then Whitney just launched it with 500 to go and led me right out. It was a beautiful day.
That was a beautiful day for you. Wow. Yeah.
For me.
Good times.
Yeah.
All right. Closing thoughts on FTP. Love it, hate it, indifferent, use it. Where are you guys at?
Oh, I'm obsessed.
What are your recommendations?
I obsess about it way more than I should.
I mean, I don't have no idea what mine is. It's just low. I think that just once it gets to a certain level of low, it just reads the letter low, L-W, low. I think it's a good number. I think it's good value. I don't think that anyone should obsess over any number, you know, it seems unhealthy, but...
You just called me out, Matt.
If you're going to obsess, over something, that's a good thing to obsess over. Better than obsessing than you're obsessing over the scale or something like that.
That's true.
That can be bad.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Personally, I don't obsess over it. But it is a useful tool for my clients to gauge progress. Like if the things that you're doing are working. Like I said before, people are often disappointed that their FTP is not as high as they thought it was going to be, or they're disappointed that they haven't improved it that much. And realistically, those FTP gains are going to be greatest when you're starting out with your training and you've got a lot of room to make up. But the higher your performance gets, the harder it is to make gains. FTP, you know, you'll start off maybe your first year, you'll have a 50% increase in your FTP and you're all psyched, but by year four or five, when you've become this stronger athlete, you're lucky to see 2 or 3% increase. So you pour all it's diminishing returns. You pour more and more effort in. And when you get to my age, it's all about maintaining your FTP, not losing it.
Yeah.
Right. So it's definitely an important metric to gauge how effective your training is. But beyond that, I don't obsess over it personally. I don't think practically, it has great value out on the race course, beyond certain courses, you know, with sustained climbs or otherwise.
My thoughts on it are that
I obsess more about my maximum power, what I can put down for 5 seconds, which is also diminishing.
Yes. My thoughts on it are that it's really difficult to increase your speed without knowing what your FTP is. What I mean by that is if you're going to do intervals that are going to be beneficial to you, you kind of have to know what your FTP is so you can set your intervals at the right amount. So
for sure.
That can be tricky. That's my thought.
Tell lots of fish stories.
Just lie.
Just lie. What's your FTP?
My FTP was a little bit ahead of Wout's. You said 460 for him? 460. I was like 461 or 462.
I believe it.
It was right in there. That's the way I remember it anyway.
You guys already said all the things that need to be said, and I agree with you. So it's a good number, and don't perseverate over it too much, but do what you can to make it better, faster, and think about all of the other things in terms of how you can make that number work for you. Whatever your FTP is, there's ways that you can take what you have and make that translate into more performance.
Mm-hmm. Granted, I'm better on rougher roads, nasty roads, difficult mountain bike trails. When the road gets nasty, I can keep my speed up a little bit better, more than the people around me usually. Mm. And so my FTP doesn't come into as much play there. And so, which is why I prefer to mountain bike race and gravel race over
Like the limiting factor on those longer gravel races, like Pendleton, like the Gorge Gravel Grind, is more muscular endurance.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, how much have you got left in your legs at hour four, hour five?
Well, gravel racing is definitely, it's different than road racing. You can't hide. You can't sit in a pack as easy on the gravel because the road is rougher, and so you have to push more watts just to stay with the group.
And the speed's lower, so the drafting effect is less.
Lower, yeah.
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 All right. I think that's it. Anything else you guys want to say about that, or can we move on?
450.
462.
Ooh. Yogi. Hey, let's jump into one last thing. Let's wrap this thing up. Matt?
Just posted a video talking about the Apple Vision Pro right before coming to the podcast.
How much you love it, and it's your favorite ever?
I tried to start off. The video is like 5 things that I think Apple should fix as soon as possible.
So, and no.
But it's worse than that, because at the beginning of the video, I'm like, this is an amazing device, but you should not buy it. Like, don't, like, it's a hard no. Like, don't buy
Matt,
it.
Are you going to get invited back to the Apple event next year?
Also, a hard no.
Probably no.
And so I just think, like, I have a couple of other videos planned to do with the Apple Vision Pro, and I'll make them. I don't think anyone cares about that product. Like, no one's watching. No one's interested. I just think the interest level kind of peaked when it was like really early on and people were like, what is this thing? And now people are like, oh, it's the thing that people don't buy from Apple.
Yeah, everybody's kind of said the same thing as you. So
Yeah. So anyway, so I'm still going to do a video after 100 days. I'll still do Zwifting. I'll do a Zwifting with the Apple Vision Pro video because that's kind of interesting to me. So I'm going to make videos that I find interesting.
Cool.
A whole bunch of swimming stuff coming up, so you know Lance will be tuning
in. I'm on that.
I have like some swimming power meter paddle things to review to get put together, and I've got a new pair of goggles that's a heads-up display kind of thing to talk about coming up very soon, so a whole bunch of videos to make. And I'll probably try to do something for April 1st. Ooh. I always put out a video
Chester.
On April 1st.
Chester.
I've just got to figure out. I don't know.
Philip McCracken? Or
what were the other ones that were on there?
Those are not rated for this okay. show.
Come on. Dang it.
Name's huge.
Janus.
Good last name, Janus.
All right.
Sorry.
Anyway, all right. Ian, you got one last thing for us?
I'm playing race promoter again.
Really? So,
yeah.
We are bringing road racing back to Portland metro area on May 11th with the reintroduction of the Barton Park Circuit Race, Barton Park Road Race. So I've been working on that, been talking back and forth with Clackamas County, getting permits set up, got my race flyer together, I should have registration open. I'm hoping by the end of the week.
Wow, that's soon. Now, we were talking about this a little bit before the show started here. There's not much else on the local race calendar for road bike racing, and I thought there was going to be some of other races. I've just been a little bit disconnected for reasons that we don't need to talk about even more. No idea why. I mean, there's literally
I don't know. We had Banana Belt out at Hag Lake last year, and apparently those guys are not interested in putting that one on again.
Yeah, they did. I'm surprised they don't want to put that. They had. It seemed like they liked that, and it was well received. And they did it for how many years? Did they do it for 3 years.
Well, this would have been the third year in a row. And they revived it from somebody else that used to do it back in the day.
Yeah, that's old.
And I remember hearing people talk about it when I first moved here. I'm like, oh, that sounds like a good little race. Sounds interesting.
Everybody loved it. The course was great. The atmosphere was great. Yeah. No, it's a shame. It's gone. And then, of course, we don't have the, we used to have the Zone 5 promoted events. That was great back in the day, 4 or 5 years ago. They were happening. But now... There's a bunch of crits coming up later in the summer, and there's a road race down in the Eugene area. It's going to be the Ober State Championships, apparently. But other than
PIR will start the end of April. On Mondays.
And Mount Tabor, But as far as being out on actual road races, Barton Park is the only one in this Portland metro area.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that'll bode well for you. Everybody can get their road racing itch scratched.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can get out of that gravel racing mode and come out and do the race. So sign up for it.
Yeah. Cool.
Hepler, you got one last thing for us?
This weekend is Easter. I don't know. That's all I have. I guess there is
Easter weekend.
There is a road race up in Washington on the Washington calendar, Mason Lakes on Saturday.
You going up?
They had the first race last weekend, and race number two is this Saturday, and Ian is forcing me to go under
Are you really
threat
gonna go?
Of...
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to. Road racing. But I might go just because Ian wants me to.
Why not? You might surprise yourself.
I don't know. We'll see.
Go race smart. See what you can do.
I'm not smart, Jake. Jake, what about you?
I really don't have too much to say. I've already kind of lamented about how I feel about the local doctors here, but I digress, and we'll be nice and not say other things about them. I'm going to be gone next week, and we're going to try and record another one of these so that we can stay on track and put out a podcast next week, but I'm going to be gone to the old Grand Canyon. So
Grand Canyon. Yep, you going to hike around or anything? How's that hip going to hold up?
I can do a little bit of hiking. I can't obviously go do the rim to rim to rim like our good friend Ed Douglas did, but I can do a little bit of hiking, but I'm really kind of stoked to go just take pictures, spend time with my family, and then we're going to also go to Sedona. We're going to go up to Flagstaff. Well, I've never seen the Hoover Dam. I get to go see that for the first time.
I took Ian to the Hoover Dam
last
year.
I remember that, yep. And then we'll finish up by going to Vegas for a couple of nights and go stay at Mandalay Bay.
Okay.
And then fly home. Yeah, it'll be fun. So looking forward to that. I need some downtime, you guys.
Even though
I don't ride bikes, I've been just crazy busy. So anyway, I'm going to say that this is done and over because my lease on this, what are we drinking here? Waterloo is up and it needs to...
I drank two of them.
Let's get returned.
Nice work.
All right. We will be back next week with another one of these. And until then, bye for now.
Like someone, you like being with that person. And it's good to think about the times you'll be together. So when you say goodbye, you think about the next time you will be together.